If you're listening to this, then you likely already know that being an independent musician can be a lonely road. And maybe your friends and your family just don't fully understand why you do what you do or why you invest so much time, energy, and money towards achieving your music goals. And especially early on, it can be hard to find people who really understand what you're trying to accomplish and how to make it happen. So that's where Modern Musician comes in. My name is Michael Walker, and you know, I can understand and relate to that feeling. I've been there myself, and so has our team of independent artists. And the truth is that basically everything good in my life has been the result of music. It's the reason I met my wife. It's why I have my three kids. It's how I met my best friends. And now with Modern Musician, we've seen so many talented artists who started out with a dream, with a passion, but without really a fan base, without a business, and be able to take that and turn it into a sustainable full-time career and be able to impact hundreds of thousands, even millions of fans with their music. And we've had thousands of messages from artists who've told us that we've helped change their lives forever. And it just gets even more exciting, fulfilling when you're surrounded by a community of other people who get it and who share their success and their knowledge with each other openly. And so if you are feeling called to make your music a full-time career and to be able to reach more people with your music, then I want to invite you to join our community so that we can support your growth and help lift you up as you pursue your musical dreams. You'll be able to interact in a community with other high-level artists, coaches, and industry professionals, as well as be able to participate in our daily live podcasts, meet these amazing guests, and get access to completely free training. If you'd like to join our family of artists who truly care about your success, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up now.
One of the most important and innovative uses that we've seen of TikTok and Reels and so on is actually to test what sort of formats and contents work best to get you in front of the audience that you want to get in front of.
Welcome to the Modern Musician Podcast, where each week I help you turn your passion for making music into a profitable career. This is all about you discovering and expressing who you really are so that you can build a loyal fan base that truly resonates with you and with your music. You can impact more people with your artwork. I'm your host, Michael Walker, and let's get into it. Hi, I'm excited to be here today with my new friend, Ankit Desai. Ankit, let me give you a quick introduction. He is the founder and CEO of Snafu Records, revolutionizing indie music with AI-powered royalty advances and artist services. He's a former Universal Music Group strategist with deep expertise in digital innovation in the music industry. He was on Forbes 30 Under 30 and Nordic Music Export 20 Under 30 honoree, recognized for transforming the future of music tech. Awesome. 30 Under 30. So today I'm excited to have him on the podcast to talk a little bit about the current landscape of music as it relates to being an independent musician and how do you... not get swept away by the tidal wave that is, you know, AI and generative AI, but how do you actually use it as a tool to be able to enhance your creativity and cut through the noise as an artist? And he's going to be sharing some lessons that he's learned from some of their Snafu artists that have gone from 0 to 100 million plus streams. And so really excited to have you on the podcast today, and I appreciate you taking the time to hop on.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you to the Modern Musician team.
Absolutely. So to kick things off, maybe you could just share a little bit about your story, how you got started with Snafu Records.
Of course. I have to say, I have to preface this by saying it was a little bit right place, right time. I was studying economics and I was on the path to, you know, going into banking and finance. And actually during my studies is when I met the CEO of Universal Music in the Nordics. Per Sundin, and you know, I was a confident kid, so I was like, you know what, Per, if I was in your position, like, I would change this and this and this, and this is probably how I'd do my marketing and so on. And that led to a summer gig working for Universal, and I honestly saw it as a little bit as a last little fun thing to do over a summer before I go out and get a real adult job. But you know, from day one and working in music, I just couldn't imagine myself doing anything else, to be honest. And, you know, like I said, in terms of right place, there was this wave of Swedish artists that took over the world around that time, you know, 2015, everything from Avicii to Tove Lo, Swedish House Mafia, Alesso. And I was fortunate enough to be part of that wave. You know, my job was to build algorithms that could identify which songs are likely to work, which aren't. And we got pretty good at that, even though our algorithms at that time were very basic. And this was my ticket to Hollywood. And I did the same at Capitol Records based in LA with a different set of artists where I was also working on digital strategy. There it was more with everything from Katy Perry to Sam Smith, Halsey, Paul McCartney. But really while I was working there is when I saw this number that really blew my mind, that 70% of all music consumption at that time was between the three major labels, Universal, Sony, and Warner. But they accounted for less than 1% of all the new music that was coming out in the world. And that was really mind-blowing to me because I was like, okay, if I think about it another way, the entire music industry as we know it is not built for 99% of the artists that are out there. And that was kind of where, you know, it really planted the seed of, can we use tech to help democratize this field, to help level the playing field a little bit? Can we use an algorithm? Can we build an algorithm that can scan through all the millions of songs that are coming out on Spotify, YouTube every year, and find that girl in her bedroom in Indonesia that's making amazing music that the world's dying to hear? And she, you know, but that bridge to connect that artist to the world just doesn't exist yet. And so that was like, you know, the ground idea behind Snafu of, can we scan through all the music that's out there to really give talented independent artists a platform to succeed? And so today we do about 1 billion streams per year across the Snafu roster, and 20 plus Grammy nominations, and we represent around 300 artists.
Wow, that is very impressive. Cool.
You're so good.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. So it sounds like what you really focus on is helping artists connect with their fans. And in particular, when you saw that 99% of artists are sort of being like cast aside, you saw an opportunity there to help democratize the music industry. Wow. So I'm curious, Snafu, could you share a bit of context around like, what exactly is the platform and how do you help artists to connect with their ideal fans?
So first of all, you know, Snafu, of course, which I'm sure you know, stands for situation normal, always fucked up, right? And that was a little bit what we thought was the status of the music industry at the time when we started, where you just have to be comfortable with chaos. Things are changing all the time. And if you're going to succeed in this new world, you need to be able to adjust and roll with the punches. And so that was, you know, that was a little bit kind of the philosophy when we started it. In terms of kind of the Snafu platform, we're the world's first AI-enabled artist services and financing company. And essentially what that means is we use our technology and our algorithms to identify undervalued music from all over the world. And then we've built up an artist services part of the offering that will then kind of like help those artists we represent increase their fan base, monetize their fan base in a better way, and generally have much better foundation to kind of having a long and profitable music career.
Wow. And you're the one that created like the algorithm that basically determines where there's an underserved market or where there's an opportunity that isn't being leveraged.
That's right. I made the first version of the algorithm. Now we have people way smarter than me that are working on that problem. But the first version was like built by me as well. But really the idea at its core feeds on engagement. Right, that even if you only have like 100, 200, 300 fans, if you're able to kind of find that fit between your music and a fan base that's really kind of connecting with it, it doesn't matter if you have 200 or 300 fans, because someone like us could go in, give you a lot of resources to scale that up in a major way. So one of the artists, for example, one of the very first artists that we started working with is these two guys in Little Rock, Arkansas called Joan. And I think when we met them, they only had a few thousand streams, I think 2,000 followers on Instagram. But their engagement was so, so high that we knew that whenever somebody new found their music, they would stream it over and over and over again. And I think now they're somewhere around 150 million plus streams. They've toured the entire world. And, you know, it just goes to show that kind of a lot of these big breakthroughs, they happen they can happen at very early stages as well, where you see the signs of what's working and what isn't.
Mm. Wow, that's so cool. So in terms of what I'm hearing you say is that one of the biggest ways to determine where there's an opportunity that's being underserved is when you look at an artist that doesn't have a lot of reach, but the depth of connection they have, you know, with those fans is astronomical. And then it's a matter of driving more attention and energy there because you know that there's something strong there.
Exactly. Mm. And that's, I think you really nailed it. And our philosophy has always been, if you look at kind of, let's say, the traditional music industry, it's so gatekeeper driven. And people always talk about this X factor, that an artist needs to have that X factor in order to, you know, in order to break through or get a record deal or whatever. And I think the way that we try to think about it is we don't try to be the arbiter of whether or not this is an artist that's connecting. What we try to do is rely on this gut feeling of thousands of people around the world, that if they're finding you and if they're engaging with your music, that must be for a reason. So, you know, who would we be to come in and say, okay, that was really great, but we'll take it from here. We know what's best for your career moving forward. Mm-hmm. So I think that's been a little bit the approach, that exactly like you said, that the depth of the connection is so important. And even if you're able to do it for a couple of hundred people, that's giving you the secret formula for what you need to be able to replicate at scale, right?
Mm. Wow, that is so cool. This visual just, you know, popped in my head of a tree with like roots, and right, like the difference between having like really deep roots and being really connected, going vertical, yeah, versus that horizontal part.
True.
Cool. So maybe we can talk a little bit about, for an artist who might be listening or watching this right now, who maybe they're early on and they want to build their audience in the right way, and they care about, you know, building those roots. What would you recommend for them in terms of doing it the right way and kind of having that that connection from the start? Mm-hmm. Like how do you recommend they start building their community?
I have a couple of thoughts on that one. The first would probably be, you know, do your research. And I think that probably, you know, one of those legs of the research, I'm sure, you know, involves going through modern musicians' material as well. But do your research in terms of what do you see working in your genre. Look at all the related artists to your artist profile on Spotify. Look at everybody else that's playing around you in your, you know, that already has the fans that you want to have in the future. See how they're engaging. See the best practices that they're using. How and when they engage with their audience and their community and so on. I think that's number one. It starts with the research to start to build, just a picture of, what are my, let's say, role models doing, and see if you can take the best aspects of that. I know like a lot of the producers and songwriters that I admire the most in the world also kind of that's their approach to writing songs, which is they make a playlist of all the things that they're inspired by. And then they bring their own interpretation to that. And it's a little bit, you know, how I would look at building my audience as well. But that's number one, to do your research, right? Number two is look at where your music or others' music is being discovered. And for the most part, I would say today that tends to be on short form video. That's like, TikTok, Reels, Shorts, you name it. And that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you need to start doing TikTok dances to start building your mm-hmm. community, because most, you know, many artists will not fit into that mold. But what it does mean is that, you know, you need to find a way for your music to fit into the context of where it's generally being discovered. And that could be anything from, you know, you and I are like talking on a podcast right now. It could be taking like a podcast clip and putting it up there, all the way to taking high quality videos of yourself, like playing live, even if it's for a few people, but you just want to get away to fit into the zeitgeist of how your music is being discovered and kind of go with the tide there, not against it. And I think the third one, probably like the very best way to make fans connect with fans, and I think I'm sure probably also you and me and everybody listening can relate as well, the deepest connection that you make with your audience is when you're playing live, right? There's just so much more that, you know, there's just so much more to connect with and to, and it's just such a stronger connection. So I think if and when you have the opportunity, I say, you know, always take the chance, to play in front of an audience and hone your craft. So I would say those are kind of my top three.
Mm. Good stuff. Yeah. So it sounds like to start with, you want to learn how to emulate and then innovate, you know, so there's patterns, there's things that work. And so you want to learn from those while also synthesizing them into your own, you know, framework, things that resonate with you.
Exactly.
And then building relationships, you know, with those fans and primarily focusing on connecting with them. And one of the best ways to connect is through live experiences and live shows.
Mm. Absolutely. And I would say, I mean, live and of course through short form video and social media. Mm. And I think there's another part to that social media aspect, which I think is very, very underappreciated and underrated to artists, which is not only do you have a chance to, of course, you have the distance between you and going viral is shorter than ever, but that's not important in this case. One of the most important and innovative uses that we've seen of TikTok and Reels and so on is actually to test what sort of formats and contents work best to get you in front of the audience that you want to get in front of. Because the great thing with TikTok or Reels or whatever is, unlike Instagram, if you post 5 times a day or 10 times a day or whatever, if the clip is not connecting with an audience, it just won't show it to your fans. So you could fail in silence as many times as you want until you find that thing, that hook or that piece of content that works. And then for many of our artists, once we found something that worked, we've replicated that over and over for the same artist, and it's worked each time and given us like a spike in streams. So using social channels as like a testing bed for your communication strategy with your community is, I feel like, a really important secret weapon.
Mm. Oh, that's super smart. Yeah, so using that short form content as a way to also test out, see what's resonating with people.
Exactly.
And the beautiful part is if it doesn't resonate, then it might feel a little bit like embarrassing, but really like it doesn't need to be embarrassing because no one's seeing it in the first place. So there's nothing to be embarrassed about.
Exactly.
Mm, that's good. It reminded me of an analogy of like learning how to shoot free throws. You know, the only way to get good at learning how to get it in the hoop is to actually like take the shot and like see what happens.
Right.
And so with each of those short form pieces of content you're testing, it's like you're kind of throwing the test. You're like, oh, that one landed, that one didn't. And then when you see it lands, it's like, okay, cool. Now I can aim and I know how to make it in the hoop.
Exactly. And that combined with having done your research in the first stage means you're probably not going to have to take that many throws before you find the thing that works.
Mm, I like it. Yeah, it's kind of like in that research phase, you're establishing where's the hoop in the first place instead of just having a blindfold on and you're just kind of like you actually kind of know what you're aiming for.
Yeah.
Mm. Cool. So one thing that I know that you have a lot of expertise in is around building a catalog and understanding the value of that catalog. I'd love to hear you share a little bit more of your perspective around why is building a catalog an important thing to focus on, and how should artists think about valuing their catalog?
Absolutely. And because I think, as an artist, of course, your first instinct is always to think about the next thing, the next session, the next song, the next album, the next, I mean, that's really what, you know, that is the soul and spirit of being an artist, is kind of pushing the boundaries, continuously, you know, creating art. And I think one of the realizations that we had was, within that mindset, one of the consequences ends up being that you end up, to some extent, neglecting what is actually your biggest asset, which is the catalog of songs that you already built. And that's really like a gold mine that you're sitting on, because you're putting out a new song. You, of course, first have to make sure that that song reaches your old audience. And then you, of course, want to like expand that audience as well. What you have with your catalog is that it's already in people's playlists. It's already soundtracked to often important moments in a lot of people's lives. So you have, you know, you have that unfair advantage over anybody else that's looking to, you know, get that listener's attention with a new song. And for the first time, it's now become possible to elevate your catalog and bring and remind people about it. Because let's say 15 years ago, if you wanted to, let's say, revive your catalog, you needed your label usually to do like a big TV campaign, like a 20th edition anniversary deluxe issue or whatever. 5 years ago, you needed to be on, let's say, a 2000s nostalgia playlist from Spotify in order to kind of like be resurfaced. But today, because a lot of the music discovery ends up being algorithmic or ends up being, you know, on social, you know, short form video, as long as your song, even if it's 10 years old, fits into the context of like the video that someone's creating, it has all the potential in the world. So on one hand, all of a sudden, your music is now competing with all the best songs that were ever released in a way that hadn't happened before. Like, you're competing with ABBA, you're competing with the Bee Gees, et cetera, et cetera. But on the other hand, this is, you now have an opportunity to monetize your biggest asset in a way that really was not possible before. And I think that's the, you know, that's the one big takeaway that, you know, that we took, and I'd like to, you know, to convey forward, of a lot of the time artists just end up not paying as much attention to their biggest asset, which is their catalog, that they can continually be nourishing and refining.
Makes a lot of sense. The analogy that kind of came back again was that the roots and like the tree. Yeah. It sounds like what you're saying is that with the catalog, it's like you've planted the seed already, and it's already started to germinate. It's already started to blossom, and it's a lot easier to bear fruit from an existing blossoming tree than it is to plant entirely new seed. And it's great to plant new seeds and to nurture and let it grow. But, you know, often we underutilize it because we think, oh, like this tree's already there. I want to plant the new shiny thing, rather than focusing on the asset that's already there.
You're absolutely right. And of course, I mean, I understand also for independent musicians, a lot of the time, one of the big challenges is that you're resource constrained, right? Mm-hmm. And that you only have so much time, and you know, you're a musician, not a music marketer most of the times. And that's why the instinct often tends to be, let me put out a new song and see if something goes differently this time. And I think that was one of the big catalysts for us, you know, trying to put our roots down in, you know, in this part of the industry, which is, you know, you focus on what you do best. And, you know, we'll build up and share the expertise in terms of how to help you monetize this asset.
Awesome. So that might lead nicely into the next question, which would be around how can artists kind of bear the fruit from the roots that they've planted. If they have a community and maybe their streaming isn't paying a whole lot or enough to like to pay the bills that they have, or the ability to invest more in their music. And so I'm curious, what have you found that's working right now for artists to be able to make a sustainable income with their music and make the most out of those seeds that they've planted?
I would say one of the biggest barriers, you know, like we've said, is it tends to be it tends to be resource constrained. Like the, like we said, 99% of the artists in the world are generally not having music as their full-time job, and many of them would, and I think that's kind of where, you know, the resource and financing aspect like comes into the picture. It's easier than ever to put out a song today, but it's harder than ever to like cut through the noise, right? And the more songs that come out in the world, the harder it becomes, and the more resources you need to, you know, to rise to the top. And I think that's why, and of course I'm biased on this, on this side, that, you know, that was a solution that we tried to come with, which is that you can get an advance on your future royalties. So maybe, you know, maybe it's not enough money to pay the bills this year, but you could, you know, maybe decide to take a real shot at a full-time music career, or even, you know, devote even more time to your music career by taking an advance on 2-3 years of your future royalties, and that, you know, that allows you to go on tour, to quit your job and focus full time on music, do a down payment on a house, et cetera, where then you're starting to actually use your catalog as that asset, in order to get to the next stage of your artist's career. And of course, you know, we're one of the, I would say we're a good player in this industry, but there are others as well. I think, you know, that offer like interesting artist services that allow artists to retain their masters while kind of unlocking financing and resources to take their music to the next stage. The Beatbread is one in the US. There's one called Amuse as well. And I think, you know, so there are a few others out there. And I think it's only good for the industry that we move towards this paradigm of artist ownership, but also artist education, in terms of kind of not just how can I create really great music, but how can I be a really good creative entrepreneur that makes my music also come out into the world in a good way.
That's super smart. Yeah, what came to mind for there, I don't know if everything is like just a nail, I just feel like the same hammer I hit it, but the analogy with the roots, it just works so well. So it sounds like what you're saying is like one of the biggest challenges is just around like being resource constrained. It's like, you know, many artists don't have the fertilizer, you know, the fertilizer to put on the roots in the first place. And
oh, that's such a great analogy, actually. You're so right. I mean, maybe we should, you know, rename ourselves to like Tree Records or something. You're completely
roots.
Right. And Roots Records.
I'm sure it's been done. Roots Records, that's so good. I'm sure it's been done, but
Fertilizer Records doesn't have the same ring to it.
I really appreciate just kind of sharing this mindset around, really it's all about investment. It's about investment. Like that fertilizer is sort of, it's an investment. And in order to invest, you know, what one of the options is to be able to pull from, you know, future earnings, which is really like the bedrock of capitalism, and having like, you know, investments and debt is, you know, with the shared belief and the vision that the future is going to be better than today. And it turns out that it's been the case. and so that's a really cool model that you've built to help artists who need access to the fertilizer today be able to have access to that, so they can invest into their music and growing it, and then they might have a portion of the fruit that are falling down that go back towards, you know, covering the fertilizer cost.
Exactly. And there, you know, and I mean, you know, to continue the, you know, the analogy as well, like, you know, artists have used this fertilizer, this rocket fuel, whatever you want to call it, to do everything from go on tour to, you know, there's one artist who actually made a great decision where he took a large part of the advance that we offered him and he invested it into more advertising for his catalog. So within a year, first of all, he was recouped, but also after being recouped, the value of his catalog increased by like twofold. And that was, I thought, you know, even we thought it was like a very interesting and innovative way, because unlike a loan, an advance that you get on your royalty is not, you know, if it we take the risk. So if it doesn't kind of like recoup in time, it's not that anyone's going to come after you to like claim the money. You just have to mortgage your rights for a slightly longer period. So he essentially de-risked himself to reinvest into his career with that advance. And that worked out. And, you know, now his catalog is worth twice as much without kind of having risked any of the money himself. So, you know, that was a, I think that was one of the more interesting and inspiring uses of this fertilizer in this case.
Mm. Wow. That is just so awesome. I'm really looking forward to connecting more after this conversation too, and just talking about, you know, integrations and, you know, we're primarily helping artists to be able to invest into their music with advertising and funnels and systems and to get a, you know, a profitable campaign set up. So I'm like, whew, man,
right.
For so many of them, the biggest challenge is not the music. They have great music, but they need those, the fertilizer.
Exactly. And I mean, and I know that, you know, you guys have done like very interesting partnerships before. So, you know, super looking forward to it as well.
Mm, awesome. So I'm curious who, when someone comes to you, like, you probably have a pretty good spidey sense for this at this point, when there's someone who has that like untapped potential, we're like, whew, like, you know, this is someone who's really going to like, you know, have rocket food. Like we're going to knock out of the park. So I'm curious, if someone's listening or watching this right now and they're wondering, they're like, I wonder if I'm like a good fit or if that might be me. Who do you look for and how can they get in touch if they think they're a good fit?
Absolutely. I would say one of the biggest indicators we've seen for artists that end up kind of going all the way is how prolific they are in terms of their creation. So that's everything from how prolific they are in putting out content, making songs, also just in terms of how they communicate with their audience. At the very extreme of this is Ed Sheeran, and I think like his schedule and his way of like working with, you know, not just fans but activations and promoting his albums is well documented and very, very very, very inspirational and well known. But I think also at a much earlier stage, these are artists that are, you know, either touring a lot, or if they're not at the size of touring yet, they're like putting out a lot of content. They're putting, you know, they're writing very, very prolifically. And what that does and what that gives you in this modern music industry is feedback upon which you can iterate. If you put out 50 pieces of content, even if all of them don't go anywhere and only get a few hundred views, I promise you're going to get some sort of feedback in terms of what's working and what's not working and what you should do for the 51st piece of content. And the same goes with songs, right? Like, you know, obviously the Swedish pop songwriting phenomenon is, of course, like, again, well-known and documented, but they always say you have to write 100 songs before you write your first good song. And so I really think that putting the time and effort into just that grinding time is what we've seen, like, separates the artists that end up kind of taking their career to the next level and those that maybe kind of stay on like the hobby level. And I think, you know, of course, you know, we obviously like welcome all, and I know you guys do too as well. So if there are artists that's listening to this and wants to get in touch, I think the easiest is either reach out to us at Snafu Records on Insta, on Instagram, or contact at snafurecords.com. You know, and we check that pretty regularly, and would love to talk more.
Awesome. Okay, so one last question for you, and I was even debating like try ask this one because this could be like a rabbit hole kind of thing, but I would love to hear your perspective on it. Is right now it feels like we're on a little bit of like a precipice, or like we're leaning over the edge of like massive change, massive revolution in the music industry and in the world due to technology, AI, due to an approaching singularity level event. And so I'm curious, from your perspective, having some pretty deep insights into what's working right now in the market, where are things headed, what are some of the waves that are approaching, what do you think the next one to 5 years is going to be about in the music industry?
Ooh, there's a, I have a few thoughts on that one. The next 5 years, what we're discussing. So first of all, I think it's undeniable that AI in some shape or form is going to be a driving force in the industry over the next 5 years and beyond. Right? Then the question is, how do we look at AI? How do we think about AI? And the way we think about AI is we look at it as an instrument, right? There will be a market for completely AI generated music that happens at the press of a button. But I think that's going to be much more niche. Like there will be, elevator music and background music for boring co-working spaces. I think that's going to be that. But if you look at the evolution of how music's been created in the last, let's say, 30, 40 years, when synthesizers like came onto the market, like people thought that was cheating because it's not a real instrument, or like drum machines, like that was the same thing. But with each evolution, it's unlocked a new kind of artist. So I had the privilege of working and spending some time with Avicii before he passed, and one of the biggest things was that he was not the best instrument player in the world, but he was an incredible musical genius, and he would write all his songs by basically dragging one note up, one note down, one note up in his on his Logic Pro, and it drove all the other songwriters crazy. But like he would really take his time, and when it was ready, it sounded incredible. And so I like to think that this evolution in technology gave us a genius like Avicii, because if it was only in normal instruments, he would not have been able to get his art out into the world. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think, AI or AI assisted music creation is going to reduce the barrier even further to get what's in your mind out into the world. Right. And so that I think is just hopefully going to unleash a lot more creators who are able to be a lot more prolific and hopefully make money and make a living off of their art. Probably a lot of the future musicians don't even know that they're going to be a musician yet. Right. And and I would say lastly, of course, what this enables is maybe the question of, is the streaming model still the right business model for the music industry, right? That the streaming model was built for an industry that was built 20 years ago. Now, if you can generate new songs at the press of a button, or you yourself could release 100 new songs a day, we think that the game is going to become not just how you get more fans, but how you can upsell your fans to make more from fewer listeners. Because at some point, the number of new creators coming into the music industry is going to be more than the number of new listeners coming in. So the paper stream is going to reduce, we think. And that, of course, means that we as an industry need to find better ways to compensate our creators.
Mm. So well articulated. Well, what a time to be alive. I mean, in all of the different slices that we could have been here, this certainly is pretty magnificent.
Indeed.
Well, Ankit, it's been a really fun conversation. I appreciate you hopping on the podcast today. And like always, we'll put all the links in the show notes for easy access. And thanks again for being on the podcast today.
Likewise, Michael. So grateful and looking forward to talking more.